And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, we had a whole series of electoral actions, elections, changes in maps, challenges to maps, maps not being challenged, all kinds of things that the Republicans are doing to try to make sure the elections are rigged, and some interesting results in primary elections in the last week. I'm sure you've been following it.
Trying to. It changes from day to day.
Yeah. Well, naturally.
It changes from day to day. But, you know, give them credit for imagination, that they think of these things that were once unthinkable, like redistricting in between the census.
Right.
Figures. That was one.
Which almost everybody thought was illegal. That you could only do it once, and it was right after the census.
Right. Some states, it's supposed to be, but if they have control of their Supreme Courts, then, those things get approved. I mean, we had something in Virginia this week about their Supreme Court ruling that the proposed redistricting was in violation of their state constitution, and to no one's surprise, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to overturn that.
But you know the maneuverings in the Virginia Supreme Court are really astonishing to behold, because in Virginia, in order to redistrict, the legislature has to vote twice, and in between there has to be an election.
Election.
Right? So it's very hard to do. And that happened. So when the second time came around for the legislature to act, the Republicans complained and said, no, advance voting, early voting has already started. So you can't do it because you're not supposed to do it on Election Day. To which the Democrats said, Election Day is a day. The election process may precede Election Day, but Election Day is a day, and we're doing it before that day. That was brought to the Virginia Supreme Court, and the Virginia Supreme Court said, the Democrats are right. You can do this. You can have the election, the referendum on whether or not we can redistrict. So the election was held, and the redistricting that the Democrats proposed won. Whereupon the Republicans went back to court and said exactly the same thing that they said in the case that they lost. Nothing changed. Their argument didn't change. The law didn't change. The facts and circumstances didn't change. This time, by a 4-3 vote, the Virginia Supreme Court said, yep, the Republicans are right. The redistricting is invalid. In other words, what they decided was valid 4 months earlier, they decided was invalid 4 months later. The only thing that changed was that the Democrats won the election. That was what changed.
Yeah.
That's what the Supreme Court of the United States upheld. That blatant disregard for the vote of the people of Virginia.
It's heads Republicans win, tails Democrats lose.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And, the U.S. Supreme Court is, pretty much on board with that. Because when you look at these elections, every time there's an election, the Democrats win or outperform the previous election not by a small amount.
Right, right.
There was a vote in West Virginia, which is about as red a state as we have. It's a contest between West Virginia and Wyoming. I guess states that begin with W.
West Virginia was a Democratic Party bastion for many, many, many years.
Yeah. Yeah. And what happened was there was judicial elections there. There had been interim appointees to the state Supreme Court and the Intermediate Appeals Court. And all three incumbents lost to Democrats. Now, I don't know if that's going to change much on the Supreme Court because of the, you know, it gives you two members out of five. But still, it's a harbinger of what happens.
Yeah, it's the vote. It's what's showing what's happening on the turnout, the voting turnout. That's what's key.
Yeah. And it's scaring the hell out of Republicans. And then we saw Nebraska this week, which had an election, and more shenanigans were there. In the Democratic primary, the Republicans put up a shill, someone who was really a Republican, the Democrat won, and then she immediately withdrew in order to give the independent a chance to win against the Republican. They know if you have a D after your name, you're not going to win in Nebraska, absent some monumental problem. But the independent candidate... Now, I'm not sure if this is for Don Bacon's vacating seat or if it's the Senate seat of Ricketts, but still.
I think it's Don Bacon.
Yeah, which is that one blue dot in Nebraska. Nebraska's not a winner-take-all electoral college thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we had that. Again, Democrats winning. Mm-hmm. Now, South Carolina had a problem. They wouldn't redistrict. And after they declined to redistrict, lo and behold, the governor is calling a special session in order to try to force them or bully them into redistricting and cut out James Clyburn's seat.
So wait a minute. So the Republicans in South Carolina, who control the legislature, decided not to redistrict.
Right.
The Republican governor is now pushing the Republican legislators to change their mind and redistrict.
Right.
Why?
Because they can't. Even one seat counts.
Right.
And of course, what it'll be is it'll be another black congressman that'll be deposed.
Right.
In this case, James Clyburn,
right,
who is really the last of that old guard of Republicans that, Democratic black congressmen who were, powerful there. And we had that. And then we had Tennessee, which redistricted. There was a black majority seat out of Memphis. And the Republicans did what used to be illegal under the Civil Rights Act. They cracked it. Cracking means they split up the vote among three other majority white districts so that no black could obtain a majority to win that seat. Interestingly enough, though, the seat for the last 18 years or so has been held by Stephen Cohen, who is white mm-hmm. and Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
But as this week he then said, I'm not going to run.
Mm-hmm.
It's a futile effort.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I happen to think that somebody should be there, at least trying. You just can't give up like that. But the other thing that happened in Tennessee, when there was among the protests about what Tennessee was doing, the legislature or the head of the legislature then decided that he didn't like the way that the Democrats protested. So we told all of them, including every black member of the legislature, that you no longer are allowed to sit on committees. You no longer have committee assignments.
But one of the state senators from the Memphis, who represents Memphis, wasn't even allowed onto the floor. He was kept in the hallway. He wasn't allowed into the meeting in which they were deciding what was going to happen with his district.
Right.
And there were photos of an unarmed guard confronting him, with his arms akimbo, making sure this guy couldn't get through the door.
Yeah, this looked like Orville Faubus, or
George Wallace,
Lester Maddox.
Yeah,
Lester Maddox or George Wallace.
Yep.
You know, all you needed was, you know, someone saying segregation now, you know, segregation, you know, forever.
Forever. George Wallace's mantra. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, these fellows in Tennessee, they don't mince any.
But race isn't a matter, according to the Supreme Court. They don't see it.
Right. Oh, they see it. They see it. They see it. They're just, it's because they see it that they act this way.
Yeah.
It's because they want us back in Plessy versus Ferguson days.
And how long have I been saying that?
A long time. A long time. Okay. But then you got Colorado.
Yeah. Now, Colorado, which has elected a Democratic governor and has two Democratic senators, and where the Republicans tried to overturn or question the 2020 election, they had the woman who was in charge of elections in one of the districts.
Tina Peters.
Tina Peters, she gave away the election codes so they could be scrutinized, which was against the law.
Well, she gave them access to the computers.
Yeah, to the computers.
Yeah.
And she was convicted.
Yeah.
And she got a thorough tongue lashing by the judge when he sentenced her to 7 years, saying that, you know, this was anti-democratic, that she showed no contrition, nothing. And lo and behold, the governor has been floating the idea. Donald Trump pardoned her, but it had no effect because she was convicted under state law.
Mm-hmm.
And now the governor, Gerald Polis, has been saying that he was thinking of commuting her sentence, giving her clemency.
Mm-hmm.
And now it appears that he's going to follow through on that.
He has followed through, yeah.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, this is why people don't like Democrats. This weakness, they won't fight. Here he's not fighting for the Constitution. He's not fighting for the will of the people.
That's right.
And I don't know what he has to gain. He can't run for governor again. He's in his second term. You know, what kind of favor is he trying to curry?
Well, what's his crazy idea? Let's assume that he's an honest man who's not trying to curry any favor. What crackpot notion does he have in his head that a person who violates the law in order to suborn the election and to give false evidence so that Trump can claim again falsely that the election in Colorado was rigged,
mm-hmm.
what possible idea can he have in his head that that should be excused?
It beats me. It's just, you know, this is a form of fraud. And Trump has been pardoning all these fraudsters. He pardoned another one he didn't pardon one. The administration dropped charges against the guy who pledged to make investments in the United States of what, a few billion dollars, but he wanted to, he was from India, I think.
India, right.
You know, and all these other fraudsters that he just pardons. If you've committed a crime of fraud, he's your man. You know, you buy some or invest in some Trump sponsored company or Bitcoin or anything like that.
Scam. How about this? Scam.
Yeah, scam.
Scam.
Although I did see this week that they're saying that they're going to start delivering those phones. Lots of luck on that. Lots of luck on that. And, you know, talk about scams. Is Trump's lawsuit, the $10 billion lawsuit against the IRS for the leak that occurred.
Which no one in the IRS condoned,
right? And no one else did. It was, it was an outside party, but the judge set a date of next week to scrutinize this, and actually appointed neutral parties to to examine whether or not this was really an arm's length transaction and a genuine case in controversy. And so Trump, trying to get around this, has decided that they're going to settle the case and drop this one. And in exchange for a pool of money of $1.7 billion that can be doled out to people who sue the government. And of course, he envisions this being the insurrectionist from January 6th. They're going to get paid. The perpetrators are going to get paid for their perfidious acts.
And didn't he also ask for a guarantee that there would be no audits of his company and his family?
Yes, forever, permanently.
Permanently,
they would
right.
Never be able to do this.
Right, exactly. So that's pretty good. That seems just.
Great, you know, imagination. They think about things. And the lawyers who are willing to go along with this, and any court that really condones it, although this judge didn't seem like he was going to condone it, or she was going to condone it. So we'll see on that. We'll see on that.
But let's assume the DOJ settles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does it have to be certified by the judge?
Well, if there's an active lawsuit, yes. However,
What if he withdrew the lawsuit and then
if he withdraws the lawsuit? Now there's a question whether the judge is going to allow them to dismiss the lawsuit. But if they file it and say withdrawing with prejudice, I don't know, whether that'll be, whether the judge will be able to. That's going to be a close question on that.
So they could withdraw it with prejudice and then make a private deal, right?
Yeah, private deal. Speaking of private deals, we learned this week that it's not just our congressman here, or my congressman, Bresnahan, who's been doing trading. Matter of fact, stock trading. Bresnahan now says he's only going to trade bonds.
What the hell's the difference? I mean, I know the difference between stocks and bonds, but trading is trading.
Yeah, trading is trading. But, of course, bonds, your committees, you really don't have that effect on it. You're not boosting the price of a stock or ruining the price of a stock and betting against them, selling short. But it turns out Donald Trump has been a major trader. That's T-R-A-D-E-R. As opposed to T-R-A-I-T-O-R, but we can talk about trader later on that.
Right. Yeah. Yes, he trades in the stocks of the companies that he makes sure the government is making deals with.
Right.
And he's open about it. His criminality is all above board.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that people say. Well, it's not criminal because he does it in the open.
Yeah, but murder is criminal in the open or in the closed.
Yeah, but these folks are absolutely shameless, and there's nobody they're putting the brakes on it. I just wrote an article about for the trial lawyers, Pennsylvania trial lawyers, about one thing that the founders never contemplated was the capture of the mechanisms of the justice system. What can you do? If the Justice Department is supposed to prosecute and you capture them and told them don't prosecute, there's no recourse.
Or if the judges are all crooked, there's no recourse.
Right.
I hate to say the judges are all crooked, but a lot of them seem to be.
You've got these terrible conflicts with Alito and with Thomas especially and with Roberts.
Right. But even if you didn't have conflicts, you have people who are, who have a certain point of view. It's reactionary. It's racist. It's elitist. It's everything bad. It's anti-democratic. They tell you up front, this is what they believe. And then they say, no, but we're like umpires. We just call balls and strikes.
Right.
But they don't just call balls and strikes.
Balls and strikes.
Yeah.
they call strikes balls and balls strikes.
That's right.
Depending on who's up batting.
That's exactly right. Just like this case in Virginia that we were talking about just a few minutes ago. Exactly.
Right.
Well, I think that all of these terrible things that you've been talking about, even with the Democratic vote, you know, coming up, being the Democratic voters and independent voters voting Democratic, all of that all sounds wonderful. That's terrific. But the Republicans, they have a defense in depth. They're planning to rig this election. If one way won't work, another way will work. After all, this whole business of redistricting, that's what they fell back on when they realized that if they didn't do that, they were going to lose. So they had to, and Trump said, we will lose if we don't redistrict. I need you, Texas, to give me how many? 10 more votes? 5 more votes?
Five more votes.
Right. And so nobody had ever thought to do that before because the pride of American foreign policy has always been to claim that in the United States we have fair elections and every country, and that's democracy. And in fact, that's all democracy is, fair elections. And any country that doesn't have fair elections is automatically not democratic, and we're their enemy. So rigging elections was not something that was in the playbook from the end of World War II until Trump. I mean, the elections may have been rigged, trumpeting that they were rigged, saying out loud that they needed to be rigged, that wasn't in the playbook, just the opposite. The playbook said, despite the fact that blacks can't vote, despite the fact that these districts are weird, this is fair elections because we stand for fair elections. But now you can't say that. But let's assume that they, you know, in Virginia, I understand the Governor Spanberger is against pursuing this matter any further, even if it could be pursued any further in the courts, the business of the referendum, because she says we have a good chance of winning the districts as they have been changed. Now, as they stand, the Republicans are losing these districts as they stand, and we can beat them. Let's concentrate on that. She may be wrong, but you know what? She might be right. So they've got something behind that. And the something that they've got behind that, we talked about a week ago when I mentioned to you the National Security Presidential Memorandum Number 7, you know, which Trump issued September 25th of last year, which gives him the right to cancel the elections. It gives him the right to throw in jail without trial anybody who's a terrorist, which he defines as anybody who's charged with being anti-American or anti-capitalist or anti-Christian or who supports the overthrow of the United States government or who has extremist views on migration or race or gender or hostility towards those who hold traditional American views on family, religion, and morality. You check any of those boxes, you can be picked up and thrown in jail, no trial, no appeal, no habeas corpus. That's what's behind it. That's the next step.
It's the third level.
Yeah. And that's in place. What people don't realize is that's already in place. And when he does that, there is no congressional approval needed. There are no court reviews that are tolerated. There's no statutory mechanism for Congress to restrict or terminate the powers once they're invoked. Now what? That is in place. People don't seem to realize that that is in place. The Jared Polises of the Democratic Party, who think that Tina Peters is suffering too much, they ought to read National Security Presidential Memorandum Number 7 and try to figure out where the hell they think they live. What do they think is going on in this world?
It's going to be, there's several things, whether or not they're even going to invoke it before the election. I mean, if they're going to look at polling and it shows that the Democrats are going to win, go up 10 or 20 seats, you know, the question is, are they going to even allow the election to occur? And then if the election occurs, are they going to go in and try to confiscate? And, you know, like Stalin said, what really matters is who counts the votes.
That's right.
They'll
confiscate the ballots. They've already tried it and done it in Georgia.
And then the third level is if they have people in place that won't certify the election.
Right, exactly. And if you complain about that or you demonstrate about that, that proves that you are a terrorist and you get arrested.
Yeah, and the definition of terrorism is being a small d Democrat.
That's exactly right. Now, people have to start thinking about how to prepare for that.
Yeah, and I don't know if supposedly they're out, you know, gaming this out, but I don't know. Besides Mark Elias, I don't know who, if anybody.
Mark Elias will have plenty of time in jail because he's right up there on the list.
Oh, yeah. He'll be one of the first.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is a recipe for Franco Spain. This is a recipe for Hitler,
Orban.
Germany. Well, Orban had elections. But this is a recipe for making sure there are no elections.
Yeah.
And, in Chile, they did the same thing. The colonels in Argentina did the same thing. And in situations like that, where no peaceful resolution of political disputes is possible, non-peaceful resolution of political disputes becomes the only thing that is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not want to do it. You may not be able to do it. But at some point, some young people will rise up and they will do it. And it just depends on how bad the country has suffered before that group of young people turns up.
If there is an uprising, peaceful protests.
Protests, they'll smash. They've got all those ice guys, and they've got all those warehouses that are empty, just waiting for you and me to be the occupants.
Well, we don't have Mark Esper at defense anymore, or General Milley.
Right. That's right. And we never will under these guys.
No, they've been purging and purging and purging.
The head of the command that's in charge of the war, the tactical, the operations in Iran, appeared before the Congress today, and he was asked by the senators, I think Gillibrand, about the civilian casualties in the bombing in Iran, and he said there are none. And the Gillibrand said, "What do you mean there are none?" And he says, there are no civilian casualties, except maybe the 200 kids that got killed the very first day. Other than that, there are no civilian casualties. Now, so far, the count of civilian casualties is up to 4,000. But he sat there and said, there are no civilian casualties. Now, from a guy like that, you can't expect that he's going to agree not to carry out an illegal order. That's a guy who's planning to carry out illegal orders. That's why he's there. And that's the army you got. That's the Defense Department you got. That's the Department of Justice you got.
Mm-hmm.
And these elections, which may or may not take place, are how many months away? 5 months.
Yeah.
That's not.
By the way, this Tuesday is Election Day in Pennsylvania.
Right. That's right.
Primary Election Day.
That's right.
And we're going to see. There's some interesting primaries. By the way, in Lehigh Valley and downwards, what's our friend Scott Perry down around Lancaster?
Mm-hmm.
And an interesting quick development is that there was going to be a Republican primary for gubernatorial nomination, and Doug Mastriano, their last nominee, pulled out. But lo and behold, they're paying him off. They've nominated him to be the ambassador to Slovakia.
Okay.
Poor Slovakia. That's all I can think of.
All right. Well, let's see what happens.
We'll have the Pennsylvania results.
Okay. Well, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.